Sometimes the hardest part about coming home from deployment is realizing that your body made it back, but your nervous system still thinks that it's deployed. Sleep turns into a fight. Pain becomes this background noise that just never shuts off. And the more you try to push through it, the more isolated you can feel. Like nobody around you could possibly understand what your brain is doing at 2 o'clock in the morning. There is another way that this can go, though. A version of life where your shoulders drop again, where you find people who just get what you're going through. You don't have to give the full backstory. A version where you discover something that pulls you out of your head and back into life one small step at a time. That's what this conversation today is going to be talking about. Rowdy McMahon, our guest today, talks about working as an Air Force nurse in Afghanistan, the nonstop urgency that she experienced, the mass casualties, and what it did to her after she returned. She also shares things about the chronic pain, years on heavy medications, tapering off of them, mental health support, and how the Wounded Warrior Project and their programs helped her rebuild from the inside out through nutrition, adaptive fitness, and community. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that's deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians who are impacted by the global war on terrorism. This memorial will serve as both a tribute to those who served and as a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you'd like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Rowdy, welcome to the show. Really glad to have you here.
Thanks, Scott. It's great being here.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into the conversation and kind of your story and everything like that, for the listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you and who you are, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, your military background, and you know just kind of a brief overview of who we're talking to here today?
Yes, I was an Air Force nurse stationed at Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio, Texas. One deployment to Afghanistan. I worked med-surg, so basically like your regular floor nurse. Deployed, worked step down, and then came back as a PACU post-anesthesia care nurse. So basically taking care of everybody out of surgery. Okay. and drunk babies. Those were fun.
Wow. It's not something that I would expect that you'd have to deal with very often, but, you know, people tend to surprise you with that kind of thing. So you mentioned you're a nurse, you know, in Afghanistan, you're caring for lots of different people. How did the conditions while you were in Afghanistan that you experienced kind of shape the way you saw your role in you know, kind of that initial reaction when you're first kind of thrown into it? How did that kind of affect you when you were over there in Afghanistan?
So I like that you say thrown into it, because I feel like you can prepare, right? Like the military, prepare. And then you get there and you do feel very much thrown into it. I feel like a lot of that happens with the military, actually.
Right.
Kind of like, oh, I'm ready for this. And I don't know if I'm ready for this. Kind of goes through your mind a lot. And then chaos happens and your body takes over and you just know what to do. Mm-hmm. A lot of those situations we'd never seen civilian side or even in the military hospitals back home. And so dealing with like mass casualty situations, which meant we were on call 24/7. We could hear the big voice overhead on base. That meant you had to report to the nurses' station, be ready to go. You didn't know how many patients were coming in, who they were. Were they allies? Were they terrorists? Were they, who was coming, what the injuries, extents were? It could be one person, could be a couple of people, and then it could be like 20. Hmm. And it was all hands on deck. And like I said, go, go, go. I'd never had, we're technically like floor nurses at that point, it kind of turned into our trauma bay. So you might be getting a report from the doctor as they're rolling the patient in, and you're taking the patient from the gurney to the bed, and they're giving you handwritten orders, which doesn't really exist anymore. That can take time. Or flushing wounds at the bedside. And, okay, we'll get you pain meds when we can. Bye, next patient, go. And then end of the day, or say it wasn't even your shift. All right, everybody's stable. Go hit the rack for a couple hours, and then you got to come back to work.
That could be a lot for anybody. I mean, even just experiencing it once, but like a whole deployment where this is basically your day-to-day is just go, 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 constant, never really knowing what's coming in, when it's coming in. You know, a lot of people go to work and they know, oh, I'm going to have a busy day today. I have a lot of meetings. I have a lot of, you know, things like that going on. I just know that I have a busy day, and you can kind of mentally prepare yourself for that. Or, you know, next week I can kind of take it a little bit easy. So I'll get through this week, and then, you know, next week it'll be a little bit easier. But in someone in your shoes, or, you know, other people like you, you have no idea from one day to the next, what are you going to be dealing with? Is it going to be mass casualty event after another, you know, just over and over and over again, day after day? And I can imagine that could be a very real possibility. And again, you don't know who you're dealing with. Are they, you know, Americans? Are they, you know, service members? Like you said, even
hostiles. Even
hostile, yeah. People. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how to, like, just mentally prepare yourself for that kind of thing. There's probably really no good way to do it other than, I don't know, when you have downtime, take the downtime and use it hard, you know?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah, I feel like there was times you didn't really get to process everything. Mm-hmm. Because it was like, okay, try to go to sleep. And there were days that I think we had a couple hours one day where we had no patients. And I was working day shift at that point, and we had a new hospital commander. And we were listening to Marvin Gaye on the radio and dancing at the nurse's station. And he peeks around the corner and we're all dancing at the nurse's station. He's like, by all means, continue. Sir, we've never had no patients before. This is the first time we're just going to enjoy this moment.
Yeah.
And so it could be very high tempo to very slow. And there could be slow days. And from going from working to the States where you had sick patients, and you always had patients, to sometimes, okay, one or two, and it's very different patients. So we're talking wound care, pain meds, versus people that needed your attention hourly, or sometimes you couldn't even leave a room. And so there was sometimes downtime, and that kind of drove me crazy. I'm more like, I needed to be doing things. I felt like I needed to be a busybody because I was used to not sometimes taking lunch breaks or latrine breaks and going, did I even pee this like whole 12-hour shift? And like being able to do that was kind of a blessing, but also, you know, the opposite side of the coin to that too is, well, at any moment.
Right.
Yeah. Don't say the Q word. Whatever you do, do not say the Q word.
You don't. Yeah, you don't really want to do that over extended periods of time. I mean, if you had to do it here and there, but that's probably okay. But that's probably not the best thing for your health, your physical health, if you're continuing to do that over prolonged periods of time. Now, when you came home from Afghanistan, obviously the pace of life changed. It shifted from that go, go, go every single day, not knowing really what's going on, to probably a more steady routine pace of life. Did you notice your like any kind of changes in yourself that for better or for worse that you were like, wow, I didn't realize that had affected me so much, you know, as I was over there? Or were you pretty much the same coming home as you were when you left?
I definitely wasn't the same. For one, I had injured my back taking care of an Afghan allied patient, and so that changed things where I was running sometimes 6-7 miles a day. When you're deployed, you hit the gym hard.
Yeah.
You work hard and you hit the gym hard. And that went from even mid-deployment to not being able to carry my IBA, which weighs, what, 35, 45 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, technically, I should have been sent home. I was seeing the chiropractor. I was getting dry needling from physical therapy. They were giving me muscle relaxers. Like, I was a hot mess. But I was like, I don't want to let my team down. I want to finish this deployment. Kind of grin and bear through the pain. When I got home, I still couldn't run because of what happened with my low back and hip. And so being able to walk became even hard because as a nurse, so when I got back, I switched units, same hospital, but I went from floor nursing to that post-anesthesia preoperative care unit. And so yes, you sit, but you also stand a lot, and then you're pushing beds, where we didn't push beds as much. And so that took a toll on my body, and I think it took a few months. I'd started going to BHOP at Fort Sim Houston because I knew something was going on. There were some things like I started having nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sleeping. My husband would sometimes have to wake me up because you start shouting in your sleep or whatever, or throwing fists. And he would have to wake me up. And I'm like, okay, I need to address this, right? This isn't good. And then that's like a whole nother game too, is finding a good mental health like therapist, like to get that help. And that's like a whole nother topic of conversation, like being female and being a nurse. Like, I don't know how many times I was told by a mental health provider, and there's nothing against male health providers, but in this situation it was, well, you didn't see combat. Well, you're okay. Like, I think you're making a mountain out of a molehill, or you're being too sensitive and you're going, okay, I need to see somebody else now. And you had to learn to advocate for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was kind of difficult.
Mm-hmm.
That was new for me.
Yeah. And I would argue that you probably saw the worst parts of combat, because there are people who are in combat where nothing happens to them. And they, I mean, physically anyways, nothing happens to them. And all you're seeing is basically the people coming in with injuries and, you know, maybe gunshot wounds or explosions and, you know, injuries from things like all of the worst things that could probably happen, I imagine, came across your hands or whatever you want to call it. You were involved in some of the worst parts of it. So while maybe you weren't in an actual firefight in that moment, like, you still saw all of the things that came through. So I don't know who this person was who was talking that way, but I think they kind of had their head up their ass.
I agree. I was like, next.
Yeah.
This isn't going to work.
Like, of anybody, anybody who isn't necessarily directly involved in the combat, the actual fighting, the shooting, and the things like that, like, I would say someone in your shoes probably had seen the worst of it. So, you know, whatever, you know, yeah, check the box. Yeah. Okay. Talk to that guy. That guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Move on to the next person. And you're right. You do have to advocate for yourself, because nobody else is going to do it. Not anyways to the same extent that you will. And that goes for anybody. You know, if you're not willing to speak up and advocate for yourself and make sure that you're getting the care and the treatment that you need and deserve, nobody else is going to care as much as you are. So you did, I think in this case, you did the right thing and continued looking for, you know, somebody else. But, you know, I know when you were, you know, back in Afghanistan, you had that back issue and, you know, you just muscled through the pain and said, you know, I'm just going to deal with it. That's something else that I think a lot of us do, because again, we don't want to let our team down, just the way you were describing. And so it's, no, you're not alone in that. There's a ton of people who do the same thing. And when you get pulled away from that team for one reason or another, it can have its own set of issues too, because you feel like, oh, I let these people down. Maybe I failed at my mission or whatever. And so, you know, there's two sides of all the different coins that are going on here, but it's a lot. I think I'm saying all this because I don't want anybody who's in your shoes, who is hearing that same type of message from another provider saying, no, you didn't really experience anything traumatic. So why are you here? Why are you even, worried about this type of stuff? There are a lot of things that we all experienced, and whether bullets were flying over your head or not is kind of irrelevant, mm-hmm. Because there may have been something else that was a traumatic experience. And, you had a lot of those things. And so I'm sure there was, even with the physical injury, there was some doubt that creeped in your head. And there's some other things that were stirring up some different kind of emotions and all that kind of stuff. And, mm-hmm. and so, yeah, maybe you need to talk to somebody. There's no shame in that. There's nothing wrong with that. So, I think when you have those type of things, it is important to find the right person, I guess, all that to say, mm-hmm. Find that person who understands what you're going through and how it's affecting you,
Right. Right. Yeah. That mental health journey is definitely everybody's journey is different. Everybody's mm-hmm. trauma is different. And one of the girls I follow now, and I love this saying, it's like comparison, right? Comparison is the thief of joy.
Yeah.
So who am I to compare my trauma to somebody else's trauma? Like, where does that get anybody?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I've said this before, too, is if you have two people and they're drowning, and one person's drowning in 10 feet of water and the other person's drowning in 100 feet of water, which one of them is drowning worse? They're both drowning. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So from the physical injuries that you had when you got back home, I imagine you probably went through some sort of process to heal on some of those things, or are you still in that process? I'm not sure. How did that all look when you got home as far as the recovery from all of that?
That was a long, arduous process that's still ongoing. I mean, some injuries never really leave. We mm-hmm. just learn to live with chronic pain.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I'm not on as many medications. I'm not on, I think they had me on like hydrocodone or Percocet for 2 years and then finally started working on a med board. And here I was still a nurse, even though I couldn't take this at work. But again, grin and bear it.
Yeah.
And that's a roller coaster and a half. The guinea pig with medications. And like at one point I was going through for fertility treatment with my husband. So I had to go off of a lot of psych meds that the VA had me on. Slowly tapered off them carefully under doctor. So I want to specify that. Don't just stop psych meds. Like that's horrible. Because
bad,
this process took months.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not easy on my body or my mind. And like I was doing self-check-ins with friends and my husband, because at any point was it, do we need to take you to the hospital for inpatient therapy? Because there was days that were definitely harder than others, because mm-hmm. you're messing with your hormones when you go off meds like that. And once I was finally off of them and I was in a place where I had good mental health provider, and I had been seeing therapists for several years, I felt strong enough that, okay, I can do this, right? And I was like a fog had lifted.
Hmm.
And I kind of looked back and tried to process, what was that? This was post-COVID. So maybe back in 2022. So we're talking a good 4 years of being on heavy medications, maybe more. And went, God, I was a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of like a process of rediscovering myself and who I was and like understanding my limits or being present in my body.
Sure.
So paying attention, right? Because it's really easy to overdo things. Like the days you have energy and that motivation to do things, and it's so easy to overdo things. And sometimes my husband even has to go, hey, are you doing too much? Are you going to regret this choice?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And part of that was after going through the physical health and wellness program with Wounded Warrior Project, because it was modifying things and paying more attention to and checking in with yourself.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that Wounded Warrior project, the physical health and wellness program that you just mentioned, because for a lot of people out there who might be dealing with some sort of, you know, physical health issues, they maybe aren't aware that this is even a program that exists, and, you know, how can it help them? And, you know, maybe they've tried other things, maybe through the VA or through other organizations, and it's just nothing seems to be helping. And, you know, I always like to give different options for folks and let them know of the programs that are available. And so this is one that came across, and it sounded really interesting, and I wanted to kind of learn a little bit more, but I'd love to hear from you kind of, well, first off, like where you first got involved with it, like how did you hear about it, and, you know, kind of what made you think that this was the right program for you, and then kind of your experience going through the program as well, you know, as far as, you know, what was that experience going into it, and then how did you come out of the program, and how did it benefit you?
So I got really involved with Wounded Warrior Project. It was during COVID. And I think a lot of us were not doing healthy things during COVID.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I remember just looking in the mirror and going, I don't recognize myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was an athlete before, you know, and so you go, whoa, I don't recognize myself. I'm not happy with myself. I'm not. And you just kind of internally look at everything and you're like, all right, time to change something. What is that? I need to be more involved with people. I need to do this. I need to do that. And I was watching TV, and because for the longest time in my head, I didn't think Wounded Warrior Project would be a fit for me because, well, I'm not an amputee, or I didn't like that mental health provider. I didn't see combat, right? I saw the aftermath of it. I wasn't in combat. And it was the saying, not all wounds are visible. And so that stuck with me. And so, okay, let's change something. So I called the resource center, and they got set up with the post and their weekly newsletters, like different things that are happening. And the focus are like, is there something you want to do? One of the programs. And I'm like, well, I'd really like to, you know, start focusing on like my physical health and wellness. And they're like, oh, well, we have the perfect program for that. And it's kind of a holistic approach to everything. And because it was during COVID, a lot of it was virtual. And so we had meetings with coaches, and they'd go over, like, one day it'd be about nutrition. And even as a nurse, I was learning things.
Mm-hmm.
And then some parts were fitness, and a lot of it was adaptive fitness and how you can modify things depending on your needs or your injuries. And so it was all encompassing. And then we went to San Diego, depending like where you are in the United States, for a 3-day expo. And that was the first time I like hung out with warriors, and we were having to wear masks, and we're in a ballroom. We're all separated at tables and doing yoga outside with like our yoga mat 6 feet apart. But we were veterans. We made it fun.
Mm-hmm.
We were laughing about stuff, and I was having conversations that there's a special sense of humor, I think, in all of us.
Yeah.
Things can go sideways really quick, but in the best of ways. Sometimes the worst ways, and you got to dial it back, but sometimes the best of ways. And that's where that camaraderie comes in. I'm like, hey, these are my people, right? Mm-hmm. And so now I had basically a team of people, and we're all encouraging each other to, I don't know, go outside and go for a walk or eat healthy or not look at our phones while eating dinner so that we're paying attention to how much we're eating. And I think 2 years later, they let me go back because since it was during COVID, and then there was like 100 warriors instead of 15 to 20. And we didn't have to socially isolate, and we were able to do more. And I probably have lost 20 pounds since doing that, like slowly, healthily, mm-hmm. and I'm more active because I would figure out what worked for my body.
Sure.
Where I wasn't overdoing it. Like, I know I can't lift heavy weights. So what do? Body weight, Pilates, yoga, and you still get the benefit of moving.
Right. And the mental health benefits that you get from doing physical exercise or other things like that is pretty huge too. And if you're experiencing a physical injury that is limiting the things that you can do physically, kind of like what you described, and you just decide, well, I'm just not going to do anything. Well, that's going to not only have a negative impact on your physical health, but it also will eventually have a negative impact on your mental health as well. Mm-hmm. And so it's like there's so many benefits to being able to do those things. And when they open up your eyes to things that you can do, it's, well, okay, then I'm not going to sit around and just do nothing. I'm going to figure out those things that I can do, and I'll do more of those things. And yeah, sure, maybe less of the heavy lifting or, you know, things that maybe you might have used to be able to do, but you're still doing something, and it's physical. I'm sure you're exerting yourself to some extent, and you're getting the benefits of the exercise. You know, you just mentioned that there was some weight loss, so if nothing else, you've gained that as a benefit. And I'm sure there are other benefits as well, but I think one of the biggest things is something else that you mentioned is that camaraderie, that community of people who came together, all veterans, all people who kind of share a similar sense of humor, you know, way of interacting with each other. And you're right, it could be the best or it could be the worst depending on the situation, but it's something that kind of takes your mind off of whatever you end up having going on in your head, and you end up just spinning through these cycles of all this just negative stuff going on in your head. And you can kind of break out of that for a little bit. Even if it's just a temporary break, it's still a break, and it gives your body, your mind a chance to kind of just take a break from all of the noise, all that negativity. And it also lets you know, I think, that you're not alone, right? That there are other people who maybe have physical injuries that maybe aren't visible, you know, a back injury. It's not visible. Probably someone looking at you would be like, yeah, no, you look fine, you know, but a back injury could be very, very painful, very debilitating. Like you said, you couldn't run or even walk in some cases. Like it can really mess you up. But knowing that there's other people out there who experience the same thing, you know, through maybe not the same thing, but their own challenges in a similar way, that I would imagine was a very big positive benefit for you for being in a program like this, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that just, I feel like it was just springboarded me forward. And once things were happening, like locally, okay, it's scary, right? To go somewhere alone. Like, it's one thing when I could bring my spouse, but he couldn't always be there, and be like, okay. And I remember one of the first events, like in-person events I went to, and it was because somebody in that physical health and wellness class kept talking about pickleball, right? And we all know what pickleball is now, but at the time, like, what the hell is pickleball? And they described it, and they had an event here, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go try this out. And met local warriors and had a blast, got outside in the sun. I wasn't a vampire for the day. And then I actually started playing with other veterans for a long while. Like, we're talking Vietnam era veterans. And these 70-year-old men were whooping my ass on the court. And I had a blast. And that gave me another sense of community, right? Like, it doesn't just have to be post 9/11 veterans. Like,
sure.
It's all veterans. And yeah. And so I think it kind of gave me that little bit of courage I needed to set foot outside my front door. Like, not all people are bad. Not all people are mean or out to get you.
Right. Yeah. And when you find a common interest, even something like pickleball, doesn't matter what the common interest is. I mean, and it may be something that you've never done before. Like you said, that was kind of a new thing to you at that time. And you said, you know, but I need to do something. So this is a thing people are talking about that people are doing. So, okay, let's get together and let's see how it is. You could have tried it and hated it, and that would be okay, because at least you tried it, and now you know, okay, well, that's just a thing I don't want to do because I don't like that thing. But if you never gave yourself that opportunity to decide whether or not you liked it, then that wouldn't be such a great thing. I think you gave yourself that opportunity. And when you are stepping out there and trying those new things, you're kind of teaching yourself that, hey, this isn't so bad, you know, being around these people. Like, these people are my people. They're mm-hmm. other veterans. They're, yeah, sure, maybe not other Afghanistan veterans. It might be Vietnam veterans, but they're other veterans. And I've talked to people from all sorts of generations of veterans, and they all pretty much get along, you know, like, yeah. doesn't matter what the era yeah. is that you came from. You're going to find some way of connecting with those people, you know, the camaraderie, the jokes, the things like that. It's going to land with, doesn't matter who you're talking to. So, yeah. so you probably had that similar kind of experience, but again, you're able to find those people with a shared interest. So that helps. It's one more thing beyond veteran. And, you know, there might have been some people that you eventually meet who weren't veterans at all, but maybe were interested in pickleball. And so now you have a connection with that person too. And,
exactly.
and you can kind of continue to grow experiences. The more things you try, the more experiences you'll have, the more interests and other things like that you'll eventually have. And you can start to kind of expand your network that way, right? Now, you mentioned the virtual events from the Wounded Warrior Project, you know, during COVID and things like that. Was it easier for you to kind of dip your toes in the water with the virtual events? Did you find that was helpful for you at first?
Yeah. Virtual events are great. Like, everything from arts and crafts to peer support groups. I still meet virtually once a month with a women's peer support group, and you look forward to seeing those women every month. And there's days, right, like, you might be having a bad day or a bad week, whatever's going on in life, mm-hmm. and you don't want to go, but, you know, that friend will text you, hey, are you going to be at the meeting tonight? Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah.
And that just seeing them, you know, it might be a day you don't feel like talking.
Mm-hmm.
But just being with that group of people, you do feel a little lighter. You do feel a little better. You know you're not alone. And yeah, I've had some really fun virtual events. And then being able to sometimes meet those people in person later. I've known you for 2 years and I finally get to meet you. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I found that with this podcast. I mean, pretty much every episode I've done has been a virtual episode, like what we're doing right now. You know, for the listeners, we're not sitting in the same room. We're miles and miles apart, and you know, thankfully the internet allows this type of connection to happen. But there was an event, you know, a couple of years ago that I went to, and a bunch of the people that I had as guests on the podcast were at the event, and I finally got to meet them for the first time in person. And it was great because the ice was already broken. I already knew the people. You know, we had already had, you know, in 45 minutes to an hour long discussion on the podcast or whatever the time was. And then we got to meet in person and have those conversations in person and more experience-based things. Like, we got to go do things together, experience things together, as opposed to just a virtual conversation where there's no physical proximity, you know, that type of thing, but, you know, which is good, but it's kind of like helps you break the ice a little bit and it makes it that much easier where mm-hmm. I may not have approached those people and, you know, had I not spoken to them on the podcast, I may not have gone and talked to them or hung out with them or done anything like that because I didn't know who they were. And
right.
and so that these virtual things really are useful for that type of thing. And then you can translate that into real world experiences as well down the line, right?
Yeah.
So through the Wounded Warrior Project, I know they have lots of different programs and things like that. And you mentioned the physical health and wellness program. Were there any other programs that you took part in through the Wounded Warrior Project?
Yes. I've done a couple all-female Project Odysseys. I've done one in person,
okay.
Which was amazing. I highly recommend doing that. And that was one of the first that they let go live.
Okay.
In person, we were at the tail end of COVID. And at least one of those females in there, like, we still, like, weekly check-ins, monthly calls. There's a few in there that we still talk, but like one in particular, we're really close. And I've done the other Project Odyssey I did was a virtual one. I didn't have time to get away. And they're like, well, are you interested in doing virtual? And I'm like, yeah, I need a quick tune-up. Because a lot of it was looking at, well, it is good. It's what for your mental health, right? But it's not like intensive outpatient therapy or something. It's not like that. It's adventure-based therapy. So going in person, we swam with dolphins and went to SeaWorld. They had to cancel like an ocean kayaking trip. It downpoured in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And in lieu of doing that, like a bunch of us women, we ventured out into these flooded streets and went and bought stickers for water bottles. But we made it. It was like an adventure in itself. There was like a foot of water in these streets. Wow. And so we bonded and you learned about each other and that had that camaraderie. And I think being female too in the military, when you're in the military and being female, it was hard to forge bonds with other women.
Okay.
Because it's male dominated. And so there's a lot of competition too, as we know in the military. And so it's, is this person kissing ass? It's hard to make those connections with other females. And there's more than one friend, another female veteran that I've talked to, or they've shared their story where they're like, I didn't have any female friends in the military. It was really difficult. This person would stab you in the back. And we're like, why do women do that? And now we're forging these bonds later that were out of the military. I don't know if it's like the competition is gone or I can't explain it. I don't know why we do that to each other, but yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I wasn't a female in the military, so I can't say that I share that experience or, you know, that I understand it at all, but you're right. It's going to be different for, you know, a female going through than a male. And so having those folks who had a similar experience being a female in the military, it's probably good to be able to hang out with those people who understand what you went through and understand how your service might have affected you in, you know, one way or another. And so, you know, having those programs where you can get together like that, I think are pretty important.
Yes, I really agree. Like I didn't feel like I had a sisterhood, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
While in the military, even though I was a nurse, right? And there's a lot more females than the nursing squadrons, right? Or sure. And we were with Army too. Like one of my closest friends ended up being an Army nurse, but it took a year because it was like getting to know each other. And even though you're working side by side, you don't know if somebody's going to throw you under the bus. And it's really sad. Mm-hmm. Where I have other female friends that they might've been one female out of 200 males and no other females. Mm. So their experience is very different. And so now they have sisterhood because they didn't even get that opportunity to, you know, be around other females.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I know when I was an infantryman, and this was back before women were even allowed in the infantry. And so everybody I served with were guys. And so for me, it was like, I went my entire service with very limited interaction with any female soldier at all in any capacity. I mean, I could probably count the number that I interacted with on one hand. And that's just, it's just, you know, a different world now, obviously, but it's probably still very, for the people who are in those roles, it's probably still very male dominated. And they probably do have those similar experiences that you're just talking about. But I think one of the great things about all these programs that you're talking about are those connections that are formed, the camaraderie, the bonds that you form, and sharing your story maybe with somebody and letting other veterans know that they don't have to go through it alone, that they're not alone in whatever it is that they're going through. There are other people who have experienced very similar things, and that's something that you get to do through these programs. I wonder, like, if you were to kind of go back in time and go to your point where you felt like you were kind of at your lowest point before, you know, kind of doing any of this kind of healing work and things that were helpful for you. What do you wish someone would have said to you at that point to kind of help you kind of kickstart that journey?
I think part of that would have been like, I think people knew, but they're sometimes afraid to ask, right?
Yeah.
Or help you find like that resource, or, hey, there's this great, you know, here's Wind Warrior Project, bring it to you on a platter. And, you know, it's okay that you're not an amputee, or, I mean, we've seen the commercials and we know we've met some of the veterans, and now, like, looking back, it's, oh, feeling lonely today, want to do some arts and crafts? You don't have to talk to anybody, but someone's going to be on video. And if you feel up to it, turn your video camera on. And we're just going to color, but you're not alone, right?
Right.
And if you're a Marine, you know, it's okay if you leave your camera on. We want to see you eat the crayons, like, just this one. But, yeah, I feel like it like, took a minute. Mm-hmm. To know that, like, help was available and that it wasn't just, I guess saying that, oh, I need a referral to a mental health provider, because that's scary enough asking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's not like that. It was very easy. It was very, as soon as you pick up the phone and call, or if you submit your paperwork, Resource Center calls you. And just, like, their intake questions are like, okay, well, what can we do for you today? Or what do you want to focus on? Or, hey, I need to get out of the house. I'm struggling, but I'm also afraid to get out of the house because, you know, the world can be a scary place. But when you're in it, right, and that mm-hmm. darkness of PTSD and everything else, you don't want to leave the house. And the more you isolate, and the more you hermit, like, the worse it gets and the harder it is to actually leave the house.
Right.
And so, like, with the virtual things, that was such a great way to almost, just like you said earlier, it's distracting yourself, but you're also being present with others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would imagine, too, that when you are doing these virtual events, you start to get to know some of the other people who are there. And then when the opportunity for an in-person event with these people eventually came up, it wasn't like you were a kid at a new school on, you know, the first day of school where you didn't know anybody. And it kind of had that nervous mm-hmm. feeling like, all right, who are these people? What am I walking into? This could be kind of a scary thing. It's, no, I've known these people for quite a while now. And yeah, I've known them virtually, but I can maybe even get excited about going and talking to these people and meeting them in person, because they seem like they're pretty cool online. So why wouldn't they be cool in person too?
In, you know, person. Yeah, exactly. Or even when we have met up, just like local events, mm-hmm. we typically, hi, I'm so and so. I, you know, served in the Air Force or the Army or whatever, And then, you know, if it's passing a ball, which I've done, right? And that we've had a ball where it had, like, random fact about yourself. And then you get people laughing and interacting. And, oh, this person has a common interest. Or, and now I have friends that'll be like, hey, did you see this? Did you sign up for this? No, I couldn't get in. Okay, well, you're going to be my plus one if, you know, I get in. And so I didn't have community here in Las Vegas. I wasn't from Las Vegas. And so while I have good neighbors, thankfully, I didn't have community until I really started, like, going to events and meeting other veterans locally. Mm-hmm. And, like, thanks to Wounded Warrior Project, like, I was able to do that and felt safe. I think for the first time after a few events and getting to know people, I was finally able to sit with, like, my back to a door, like at a restaurant. Because sometimes that's an event, is let's just go eat food and interact.
Yeah. Yeah. it is. And I know a lot of people have that same trouble that you just mentioned, having their back to a door, or, you know, any kind of vulnerable position like that is difficult for some people to be able to do. But over time, you know, you've just proven that with time and some practice and some, I don't know exactly what it is, but with time, you can eventually get to a point where you can do those types of things. And it's not taking control over your entire life where you feel like I can only do certain things because this is holding me back and things like that. So to your point, you know, what you wish that someone would be able to have said to you way back when, you know, just asking, hey, do you need help? How can I help? And, you know, those types of questions are important, because a lot of times people feel like they're going through something all alone, or that they have to go through this thing all alone, that they can't do anything where they're bringing other people in, because they don't want to feel like a burden or anything like that. But if you kind of break the ice and say, hey, I want to help. How can I help? What can I do? And you start with things like that, then you might actually be able to get that person the help that they need, mm-hmm. without them struggling to figure out this stuff on their own, right?
Right, right. Because it's like the Wounded Warrior Project logo, right? Mm. The warrior carrying the other warrior.
Right.
Like, sometimes you're the one carrying somebody else.
Yeah.
Because everybody goes through things in life. Right. Everybody has up and downs, and sometimes you need to be the one being carried. And so, I've had that
right
both ways, right? That's as doing check-ins with people. Hey, I haven't heard from this person in a while. Or even going to an event and say you have all this high energy, fun, good time, and now you're home.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just you or you and your dog, or, and you go back to life, and that can get, you know, hairy sometimes.
Yeah.
And so it's important to check in with people and go, hey, how are you doing? Or as simple as, I was sick a few weeks ago and it was another female and we bonded over 80s cartoons. And I'm like, I found all the old Rainbow Bright episodes on YouTube, and she said she just lost a family member and I knew she was down. And so I was checking in, how are you doing? I'm like, all right, I found all these episodes and I found this and that. And she's, thanks, I'm going to watch TV with you, but, you know, across the United States.
Sure.
But this will cheer me up. Thank you. So, yeah, it's simple things that I think we think about more now, like we're spreading awareness more now. But it is important to ask, because it's really hard to advocate for yourself when you do need to be carried.
Right. And you brought up a great analogy of the Wounded Warrior Project logo. And for anyone who's not familiar with it, I'm not sure how you cannot be familiar with it, because it's everywhere, but, you know, but it's basically two soldiers, one carrying the other, you know, kind of up on his shoulder like that. But I don't think anyone for a second would look at that logo and say, that guy who's carrying the other one is thinking to himself, oh my God, this sucks. I hate this. I, you know, this guy is such a pain in the ass, and I don't want to be doing this. And, you know, I'm just so pissed off at the world and everything like that. No, he's glad that he's able to be there for his buddy and able to carry him when he needs help and able to help him. It probably gives him a great sense of feeling of accomplishment or, you know, purpose, or, you know, some meaningful thing is going on inside of his head saying, yeah, I'm able to help this guy. And
right.
I bet, you know, you as a nurse, you know, a patient coming in to you for help, I don't think you ever were looking at that patient like they were a burden to you. That's your job. And that's mm-hmm. where you found purpose and meaning. And that felt very good that you were able to do your job. Looking at it from the other way around, you know, just because it's something, you know, a mental health thing or even if a physical health thing, you know, and you're just trying to muscle through it on your own. I mean, there are people who actually care and want to help. And, mm-hmm. you know, not that someone's going to necessarily carry you around everywhere, every single place you go,
right.
you know, like physically carry you around. But, you know, that would be a little much. But, you know, yeah, sure. If you fell down, yeah, sure. Someone will help you up. And if you need help getting to a couch or a chair or something like that, maybe they will carry you from that mm-hmm. distance. And I don't think anybody's going to be, you know, bitching and moaning about it. Like it's going to be a thing that people are glad that they were there to be able to help, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, don't take that away from other people, I guess is kind of what I'm trying to get at. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like the no man left behind. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, someone gets wounded or unfortunately that it happens, people get killed and, you know, nobody looks at that. Oh man, I gotta go do this now. It's part of the job. It's part of the duty. It's part of, mm-hmm. part of being human, caring about people is helping them out. I think right. that's what part of the thing that separates us from wild animals is like the wild animals don't necessarily care about the other wild animals. They care about themselves and how do I get food and how do I get, mm-hmm. you know, shelter and all the things that I need. I'm going to go figure that out for myself. And, you know, yeah, sure. They probably have a close family of you know, other animals that they care about, but, you know, deal with everybody else and they're going to worry about themselves, but that's not human. That's not human nature. Right. And we do care, you know? So before we wrap up, is there anything that we've missed that you want to cover that we might not have got a chance to talk about, anything that you want to share or anything like that?
I know we talked about finding common interest in mm-hmm. veterans and for me and like my mental health journey, and I'm sure you know this, and I'll make sure to get you some stickers as well. There was a point where when we had first moved here, and my husband was afraid because he airline pilot, and he was afraid that if sometimes he'd leave the house that maybe he wouldn't come home to a wife.
Mm.
So he'd be doing check-ins and that sort of thing. But at the same time, you know, is something going to happen? Will she ask for help? Will I ever smile again or really feel joy? Right.
Sure.
And they have an exotic car racing place here. And that was a birthday present. And he put me in a car and couldn't wipe the shit eating grin off my face and hit collect for him. And so did some research. He knew how to build a race car. This is like long history of his family, racing cars and mm-hmm. motorcycles and all these things. And so like before I knew it, we joined an amateur road racing league that required you to switch drivers every couple hours. And after the first race, I'm like, you know, we need to share this with others. If this can bring me joy mm-hmm. and we're in the pits and the garage area and the teams next to us, and a lot of them are veterans, and they get together and they build a race car and they go for a long weekend. We're talking 7-8 hour race days, and you all have to work together. You want everything mechanically to work right. You have pit stops. You got to change tires. You got to refuel. Like everything has to work right. You got to communicate with the driver, make sure they're healthy, and you know everything's working right. And we wanted to bring that to other veterans.
Okay.
To give them that camaraderie, and maybe they didn't grow up with racing or know how to build a race car, right? Or maybe they like to work on cars. And so now we have 2 race cars, and February for the race in Sonoma, that'll be the first time we bring 2 race cars to the track. And I have 3 other veterans that we're working on putting in one of the race cars. And so we're basically building a family support and veteran race car team, and go have fun and meet other fun people. And at the end of the race day, we all get together with the other teams eating food. Those who drink can drink, but yeah. And we're all just telling stories and shooting the shit, like veterans and civilians alike, and bonding over this. And so I know like a lot of veterans, we have that adrenaline side to us too.
Yeah.
And that was one of the few things I noticed, that while driving the race car, because you have to focus. You have to focus on your next turn, your braking markers, who's around you in the other race cars, and then what's my fuel gauge, what's the temperature, all these different things. I didn't have time to be hypercritical in my head or worry about those thoughts. It just shut up for once. It just shut up, you know?
Yep.
And you had to be present in your body too. Hey, my mouth's a little dry. Yeah, I probably need to drink some water, right? That is part of, yes, your head's on a swivel in the race car, but at the same time, it's like mirror this corner. Oh, water. And go. And so, yeah. But we called the suicide crisis line and said, hey, can we put this on our car?
Mm.
And it was right after they released the 988 number and then, you know, plus one for veteran crisis line. And they said, sure, we don't have any money to give you. And we're like, we don't care. We just want to spread awareness because racing saved my life. Wounded Warrior Project saved my life. They gave me something to look forward to and that camaraderie, that friendship, and like something to look forward to, right?
Yeah.
Something fun. And so we raced with that on our car to spread awareness, to get others involved and share, and just share that with other people that are interested. So.
Well, that's great. And that racing, I mean, and it could be any number of things, but in your case, it's racing. I think it's important for people to find that thing that lets you feel some sort of joy again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard sometimes, especially where you're stuck in your own head for years and years sometimes in some cases. And people just, they don't get out of their own head and get out of their own way. And eventually you feel like there's nothing that will bring you joy or any sort of mm-hmm. happiness or other positive emotions or anything like that. But, you know, this one experience that you had, like you said, you couldn't wipe the grin off your face. And it was just there. And because you enjoyed it so much, but had you not tried it and stepped out and actually tried to do that thing, you would never have experienced, you wouldn't be doing the things that you're doing now. And you'd be, you know, back a few steps in this journey, right? And so I think the kind of takeaway from there is, you know, maybe racing doesn't sound appealing to a listener. Okay, that's fine. It's not for everybody. There's a lot of things, though, that are out there. And right. The important thing is that you try something. And even if you think that maybe it's not going to be for you, maybe it will be. You know, just give it a shot and see. And when you do that, eventually you'll find things that do spark some sort of joy, that do give you that smile that you just can't wipe off. And when you find it, latch onto it and keep going with it, right? Because there's no way of getting that just by sitting at home in your own head, not doing anything, you know? So it's a good thing that you found it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really glad we like found that. And that just kind of, you know, it was an epiphany, really. But every great idea starts with what, like that light bulb moment.
Yeah.
And yeah, and going from there. And we've even had friends come out that they're like, oh, I wish I could drive, but I get car sick. Okay, but you like to take photos and video. Come hang out with us. And they're like, that was really fun. Okay, yeah. I see like what you guys do all day. You're really working for a common goal. Like you have a mission. And yeah, and then at the end of the day, you close the garage doors and then it's time for fun and hanging out. And
right.
Yeah.
And that's a great point too. You know, you don't necessarily have to be driving. You don't necessarily have to be doing, you know, you could be doing something else that's related to it. And, you know, like you said, taking pictures or whatever like that, that's cool too. And if that's your thing, then do it and find the thing that you like and the thing that brings you some joy. But this has been great. This has been a great conversation. A lot of great resources, and I will have links to all the stuff. Obviously, you can go to the Wounded Warrior Project website. You know, that's pretty easy to find, but I'll have links to the various programs that we talked about and things like that. So any of the listeners who are interested in joining up with any of those, they can find out more information. Is there anything else outside of the website that we should be aware of as far as the listeners go for resources or anything like that?
No, just, and if you're not sure, like, what your needs or what you want, like I said, just call the resource center because they're going to help you figure that out and they'll set you in the right direction because there's so many programs I haven't even experienced, and mm-hmm. getting together with other warriors, you learn things. You're like, oh, that sounds fun, or I want to try that. And so it just kind of just opens up a whole new world.
That's awesome. And yeah, so definitely check out that resource center for the listeners. And Rowdy, thank you so much again mm-hmm. for coming on the show and sharing your experiences. I know it's not always the easiest thing to share, but you know, you opening up and sharing, hopefully someone else hears your story and it resonates with them. And that's the spark that gets somebody else, you know, off the couch and into a better, happier way of living. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott.